In this episode, I am speaking with Christina Wallace, who is the author of The Portfolio Life, How to Future-Proof Your Career, Avoid Burnout, and Build a Life Bigger Than Your Business Card. This book was written targeting millennials. However, I think it's a worthwhile read for anyone at a crossroads in their career. Cue the music!
Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies, listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers, and finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 321 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for a discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. In this episode, I'm speaking with Christina Wallace, who is the author of The Portfolio Life, How to Future-Proof Your Career, Avoid Burnout, and Build a Life Bigger Than Your Business Card. This book was written targeting millennials. However, I think it's a worthwhile read for anyone at a crossroads in their career or life. Here is a bit from her website about page. A self-described human Venn diagram, Christina Wallace has crafted a career at the intersection of business technology and the arts. She is currently a senior lecturer at the Harvard Business School, where she teaches entrepreneurship and marketing. A serial entrepreneur, Christina has built businesses in e-commerce, edtech, and media. She has also co-authored The New to Big, How Companies Can Create like Entrepreneurs, Invest Like VCs, and Install a Permanent Operating System for Growth, and was the co-host of The Limit Does Not Exist, an iHeart podcast with millions of downloads over three seasons and 120 episodes. I found the process that Christina writes about is excellent for anyone who is at the crossroads of what they want to do next. In some ways, it's actually more applicable to people in their second half of life because they have more life experience to reflect back on. If you are at a crossroads, please give this episode your full attention. This episode is sponsored by the Career Pivot community, but more on that later. I wanted to let you know my audio is less than stellar. I suspect I had my virtual private network turned on, and I'm not in my normal recording location in Mexico, but in Austin, Texas. Christina sounds stellar, which is the important part of the episode. Without any delay, let's get to my discussion with Christina Wallace. Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast. I have the real joy of having Christine Wallace, who wrote the book, The Portfolio Life, How to Future-Proof Your Career, Avoid Burnout, and Build a Life Bigger Than Your Business Card. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
You're young.
Say that again.
Well, it's kind of like the other day someone said, "Hey, young man." I said, "Oh, I like you." Turned 67 the end of this month. I like this book, but you really are targeting millennials. But I think it's really applicable to anyone who really wants to make a shift. Why did you write the book? And why now?
So I wrote this book in part, at least, because I needed to explain my own career and life, my strange zigzag path. I've been seeing more and more people interested in how I've been able to do what I've done. And in many ways, they were looking for permission to do that themselves. And so part of what I wanted was to put together this process, put together this model and say, this is This is how and why I've been thinking about doing what I do. And P.S., there's no magic, you know, sparkle dust that's going to say you have permission. Go do it. You have my permission. So part of that is I wrote it for myself and for everyone like me, but you're exactly right that this is not just for millennials. My editor made me pick an audience. I picked my people, but it really is for anyone going through a transition, whether that's coming out of school right now, thinking about that midlife crisis that comes with kids, thinking about that last chapter of your career and what you want that to look like, those moments of transition, that's what this book is for.
Okay, because a lot of folks, as we reach our 50s and 60s, and some people like me who don't want to retire, but want to work at something I enjoy that has meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, one of the things I picked up out of the book is many of us, we took jobs and took career paths mm-hmm. because they paid us.
Yeah.
Not because we wanted to do it.
That's right. That was the model then. And I think the big difference between then and now is those paths don't exist anymore. They certainly don't pay what they used to, right? This notion of like, well, I don't love this, but at least it's enough. I can raise a family. I can send my kids to college. I can pay for a house. That is not really on the table for most kids starting out, even for the elder millennials among us. I turned 40 this year, and that has never really been an option for my generation. And so I think the difference is you guys at least had that option, even if it's not what you wanted. But what you're feeling now, this desire of like, I'm not dead yet. Like, I've got a lot to offer. I just don't want to do the hustle. I don't want the grind anymore. I'm looking for that fulfillment. That is the same mindset that people are having in their 20s and 30s and 40s. They're saying, why do I have to wait till I'm 60 to be happy? Like, what if I want to be happy now?
By the way, I love your comment, the elder millennial.
I saw us described somewhere on Twitter as the back pain millennials, which I was like, ouch, that is true.
Yeah. Well, one of the first things I want to ask is, what do you define as a portfolio life?
Sure. So I describe this as having four pillars. It starts from a pillar of identity. How do you see yourself? Because a lot of what you then have the ability to see as options for your future starts from, well, where do you fit? What do you bring to the table? And I have always seen myself as interdisciplinary, zigzagger who has lots of things that I want to do. And so this notion of like defining myself by the specific job on my resume or my LinkedIn has never fit me. And as a result, I had to create a model for how to introduce myself, to describe myself that wasn't my job. And I landed on, I will fully admit, I was slightly drunk when I came up with this. I landed on this idea that I'm a human Venn diagram. And I've built this life at the intersection of business, technology, and the arts. But I would argue that we are all human Venn diagrams. The question is, what's in your Venn diagram? So starting from a place of understanding, you are more than your job. That gives you permission then and the ability for pillar two, which is optionality, right? I think we all feel at the beginning of our lives when we're young, like the sky is the limit. You could be an astronaut, you could be president, you could be, I don't know, a spy, whatever. But eventually, as you make choices, you're closing doors, you're narrowing in. And I think there's a perception that at a certain point, the only options you have is a straight line from where you've been standing. And I just don't think that's true. Certainly in 2023, that's not true. And so if you can see yourself as more than just how you've been monetizing your time, then you start recognizing you have a lot more options to choose from for where you go forward. And that becomes really important because pillar three is diversification. We all recognize diversifying financial portfolios, smart move, but this idea that we would diversify our lives, our income streams, our career hasn't seemed as obvious until now. But I think looking at the rate of disruption, technological, geopolitical, ecological, all of these things that were supposed to be like once in a lifetime that somehow are happening like every 5 years, that's not going away. And so having more than one iron in the fire, whether that is an income stream, a network, a relationship to other, you know, industries or pieces, or just pieces of your personal portfolio, hobbies, community, relationships, health, having this well-diversified approach to your life is what's going to help you navigate that uncertainty and mitigate that change. Which brings us to the last pillar, and that's flexibility, right? So in a financial portfolio, we recognize you're going to allocate assets for a certain period of time, for a certain phase of your life. When you're young and you can take more risk, it's going to be heavy on stocks. And as you approach retirement, where you need a little bit more predictable income, you might switch to more fixed income securities, right? So we recognize this makes sense. You rebalance for the stage of life you're in. This is same of your portfolio life. So as you think through what phase am I in, what do I need, what do I want, and then how do I design the pieces of paid work, unpaid work, community contributions, whatever that is, to fit that season of life.
Please review the four pillars.
Identity, optionality, diversification, flexibility.
And I like all of those. And as we talked before, I'm a poster child for all of those.
Exactly.
Because
you're
I've
in the
made,
vanguard of this.
Yeah. Yeah. As I said, my career path has been a zigzag, mm-hmm. which by the way, this is one of the things I saw in some of your charts where mm-hmm. it's, you know, we all want our careers to be the single upward moving. Yes. But the reality is it's almost always zigzag.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. Nothing ever goes as planned.
That's exactly right. And that's one of the things that I emphasize in this. It's for good or for bad, there are always these external factors that we can't control. And the feeling that like the stable choice is take a job, go up the career ladder, like be linear, that's not stable. You have just as little control in that path as you have doing something more entrepreneurial or zigzaggy. It's just more of an awareness of that control in one version versus the other.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you talked about your grandparents in the book, mm-hmm. which were my parents,
mm-hmm.
and my parents taught me that when I graduated from college, I would take a job with a big company mm-hmm. and I would ride off into the sunset. I'd work there for 35 years and I'd retire with a pension.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And 3/4 of the way through, they moved my cheese.
Correct.
Right? And I watched, particularly in the dot-com bust, because I watched upheaval occur mm-hmm. in that time mm-hmm. where I saw friends who saw this as being the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a number of friends who never really recovered.
Yeah.
Versus I came out smelling like a rose because I made the move.
Yeah.
And I made the move before.
Yes.
I had to.
Yes. That is crucial. Making the move before you have to, doing it on your terms,
yep.
is what makes the difference between really loving the next step and being forced into whatever might be available. But the key to making the move on your terms is keeping an eye on what's happening, seeing yep. that change is coming, and then being really thoughtful about, okay, where do I want to move next? Who do I know in that space? How do I position myself to make that leap rather than sort of pretending it's not happening and like hoping that you'll be saved through the process?
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to go on to this, the next part, which is the what and what mm-hmm. really your Venn diagram.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've for the longest time, I was doing a lot of Berkman assessments. Mm-hmm. And I would claim that people's superpowers were very often these combinations of skills and talents that were unusual.
Yes.
So I was a geek that could speak.
I love that phrase.
Which we know is an oxymoron.
Yes.
Right? I had a guy in the online community who was a big time number guy. Mm-hmm. But by the way, he was a kind, compassionate, emotional soul. Mm-hmm. That's an unusual combination. Mm-hmm. And by the way, he is now in elder finance, helping families where the parents have dementia or are approaching that point, mm-hmm. and helping them manage their finances.
Yeah.
Manage the family and the finances.
That's brilliant.
It's a whole new discipline.
Yeah. It is. I love that that framing. It's sort of, where is the paradox of what you bring to the table? Where is that kind of mashup that is not common?
Right.
And that becomes your unique contribution to the room.
This episode is sponsored by the Career Pivot Membership Community. The Career Pivot Membership Community is a group of people from all over the U.S. and Canada with diverse backgrounds. This is a community where everyone is there to help everyone else out, figure out what they want to do in the second half of life, and then make it happen. Many have made changes that they did not know existed or was possible when they came to the community. They learn from each other and broaden their horizons on what was really possible. Let's hear what Debbie had to say about being part of the community.
I think one of the things I enjoyed the most was having a group of professional people that you could speak really candidly with about your situation. Obviously we're all in the same boat, so it's not, you know, talking to a coworker, hoping nobody overhears, but it's just people that you can speak candidly with. You can hear about their journeys, their careers. You know, some people have some really interesting backgrounds. And you get some idea of the struggles they've faced and some of the things they've tried and what's worked, what hasn't. And that can help. That can be helpful to get some direction, to apply to your own situation.
You can't just join the community. I bring people into the community every few months in groups. You can sign up for the waiting list, so when I open the door for new members, you'll be notified. If you're interested in learning more about the endeavor and sign up for the waiting list, please go to careerpivot.com/community. Now, back to the episode. Yeah, I have another woman in my online community who I referred to as a logical creative. Mm-hmm. Very logical, but very creative.
Yeah.
And the average creative is not necessarily logical. How does one discover that?
There are two ways in, right, to get reconnected with your Venn diagram. One is through self-reflection. And there's a series of questions that I include in that chapter that help you, in many ways, excavate these pieces of yourself that you might have put away as you became serious and grew up and, you know, worked your way up a corporate ladder. As you're like, well, that's a silly hobby, or that was a childish interest, and that's, I'm going to put that away. So some of these things, truly, it's like, what section of the newspaper do you read first? Where, you know, what movies do you love, or what corner of the bookstore do you go and get lost in? What were you known for? Like, did you have some accolade in the ninth grade that were like, oh, what? That was part of who you were once upon a time, right? So bringing these pieces of you back to the forefront, and don't judge them yet. Don't say like, well, that's silly. It's not relevant anymore. Just put it down, pull this all together. And then when you're sort of done with that self-reflection, or even if you're struggling with that self-reflection, the other way in is to go talk to your friends, your colleagues, your family members, and you ask them, what do you see? Who am I? I have these three questions that I phrased in the book. I made use of them after my first company failed, and I was so lost. I was like, I don't even know why anyone would hire me. Like, what do I bring to the table? I went and did all these coffee chats, and I asked them the same three questions. When have you seen me happiest? What do you come to me for? Like, what is that moment that you have a spark? You're like, you know, I should see what Christina thinks about this. And then, where do I stand out against my peers? To exactly your point, are you a geek who can speak? Like, that probably stands out. So what are these things that I may not even realize are all that rare, but you are like, are you kidding me? That's an incredible superpower. So part of it is self-reflection. Part of it is let your people tell you what they see. And as you pull this all together, you'll start really remembering, reconnecting with like, oh yeah, I do love that. And I can bring that to the table. And it doesn't matter if you see how it's relevant yet, just start there.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things the exercises I do with people is have them go back to their childhood mm-hmm. and say, what did you do that you couldn't get enough of?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because when we're very young, we have no filters on us. Mm-hmm. And that usually helps uncover talents, not skills, yeah. talents. Mm-hmm. And similarly, I just had a discussion with a family member who's in his 30s, mm-hmm. and he got into IT, and he's just going, I can't do this anymore. He's a creative.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I've seen. Is creatives who say, you know what, I can't make money at this. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take all that creativity, I'm going to put it in a little box.
Yep.
I'm going to seal it up, put it underneath the bed, mm-hmm. and forget about it.
Yep. I'm going to call it silly and stupid and childish, and I'm going to grow up and be a serious person. Yeah.
And what happens is at some point in time in their life, they go, mm-hmm. I can't do this any longer.
It's true, because you are literally, it's like a limb. It's like you yeah. cut off a limb and you shove it under the bed and you're like, I can live with only one arm. And at some point you're like, you know what? Why should I do that though? I have a whole other arm available to me. Why can't I have that as part of my life?
Yeah, one of the things that one of my mantras is when I started my career, I became an actor. Mm-hmm. I played a role. Mm-hmm. And you keep on playing those roles and you get good at them. Mm-hmm. In my case, I got paid a lot of money for it. And what happens is it's a certain point for me, it happened in my 50s mm-hmm. where I couldn't stay in that role. Mm-hmm. I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. Staying in character was just flat exhausting.
Yeah.
You finally have to realize I had become something that I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I was really good at it.
But it doesn't mean you want to keep doing it.
Doesn't mean I want to keep yeah. doing it.
Well, this is particularly relevant if you, one of the things you might realize is I like the content of this job, but the context, there's something about the culture of the company. Maybe it's the commute to work and back, whatever. My boss has changed, whatever. There's something about who I have to play in order to do this work that is sapping me of my energy. So it many times a career pivot isn't even a real pivot. It's literally just like, could I do this in a different context?
Yeah.
And part of that comes from, okay, well, what version of yourself is the happy version? Like, what is the situation, the environment, the culture, the feedback loop? How and when are you your best self? And how does that then direct you toward the space where you don't have to play? You can just be.
Yeah, one of the challenges is knowing who is your best self.
Yeah.
Because you reach a point where I had become something that I didn't know that I had become this actor. So let's go on to part three.
Yeah.
How do we make this happen?
So part of this starts from you've expanded your identity, you've looked at your Venn diagram, and then it comes down to, okay, well, what do you need? And what do you want? And how do we make that fit in 24 hours against the budget that you need to live your life, right? Like these are our design constraints, and we get to pull them all together. And part of why I like starting with what do you need, right? Your example of the 30-year-old in IT, it became quite clear that what he needed is an opportunity to be creative. Now, that doesn't mean he has to quit his IT job and go become a TV writer, but it means he needs to find an outlet for creativity, likely a community that encourages that creativity and an opportunity to grow in that creativity. So that could be a different type of job, a different type of industry, or it could be, hey, I want to downgrade from this management path to a good enough job that leaves me with all of the space and time and energy to pursue my creativity in a hobby way, in a moonlighting way, right? That is a very common path for creatives who also want to be able to pay a mortgage and raise a family and think through this. So you start with, what do I need? And that can be everything from money, growth, people. I've worked with folks in their 60s who say, I don't want to retire because I need a reason to get out of bed, shower, and put on pants every day. And I'm like, great. There are ways we can meet that need without you continuing to work 12 hours a day. So let's find what those opportunities could be. Next, when we talk about, well, what do you want? What you want, I push you to do this exercise called 100 wishes for your life. It's probably a little bit easier to do at your age than it is with my like 20-year-olds who kind of have a lack of imagination in some cases, where I'm like, that's a great first like 12. I want you to think it through 100. Like, what do you want on your deathbed? What do you want to have seen and experienced? And who do you want to have loved? And what imprint do you want to leave behind as you move on, right? Like, what do you want? Right? Pushing that. And I think once you have that broad sense of truly, what do I want? There's probably a point where you recognize like, okay, I've gotten a big chunk of these things. I've had a rich, full life, but there's a few of these, the BHAGs, the big, hairy, audacious goals that I have never been able to put effort toward because I've been focused on these other things. That might be an opportunity to say, you know what, this last chapter, these next 10 years, I'm going to make progress against that. You want to be a Tony-nominated producer? Okay, let's figure out how to start getting involved in commercial theater in New York, right? What is that first step? And the step after that, you start making progress. And as you piece this together, you can figure out which things have to be monetized, which things can be volunteer or community-driven. Which things do I want just for me? Maybe your health is something you really want to prioritize for this chapter of your life. It's going to make a difference whether you have a really wonderful 30 years left or you have a very expensive 10 years left before your kids have to like take over and be responsible, right? How can you make that a meaningful part of your portfolio? All of these things, it's messy. This is art, not science, but you sort of have these pieces on the different corners of your, I don't know, your kitchen table. As you pull this together and you craft, what is the allocation of my time and energy against these wishes that meets these needs and that deploys what's in my Venn diagram?
It's interesting. I'm going to have Russ Scenes back on the podcast in a couple of weeks. And Russ has gone through multiple changes. He's publishing his second book. His first book was on the pilgrimage of the Camino de Santiago, the 500 miles hike pilgrimage across Spain.
Yes.
And he's now doing the Pilgrim Pass to Assisi, which is 300 miles on the way to St. Francis across Italy. Mm-hmm. And the point here is, Russ, when he left, he was the executive director of Menno Media. When he left that was the publishing arm of the Mennonite Church, which was collapsing. Both religion is collapsing because you guys don't go to church.
It's true.
And he was in the publishing business. But this was not the path. pandemic came along. He went to work for Get Set Up. He's tried various different things. Things did not exactly go the way he planned. But the point is, he adapted along the way, which you talk about in the book, and the fact that there is failure. And one of the challenges, I've got a blog post out there, failure is not an option, which is a mantra of my generation, is BS.
It is. It is, because, and I argue this vehemently, failure, in my definition, is simply what you wanted to happen is not what happened, right? You had a hypothesis, if I do this, then that will happen. And that hypothesis was invalidated. Now, that could be because you were wrong. You thought, I'm smart enough, strong enough, capable enough, whatever, and you failed. Maybe, maybe. It could also be because there were other things going on that you don't control, and they got in the way. And there was nothing you could do about it. And so part of what getting comfortable with failure for me is so important, because we do not control our lives. We just don't. And if you think you do, you are lying to yourself. And so getting comfortable with this notion of, I'm going to try things, they might not work out. If it's my fault, well, I'll own that. I will reflect on that. I will decide if that's something I could do better on next time. But if it's not my fault, I'm not going to own that. That doesn't, that's not for me to take on. And I can brush this off and move on. But in either case, it allows for what Clay Christensen would call an emergent strategy rather than a deliberate strategy. A deliberate strategy works when you can see the future, when you can see all the pieces, when the world, when you can believe that the world, by the time you get to wherever you're going, is going to look roughly the same as it does today. Then you can plan this linear, deliberate strategy. This is how a lot of big companies think about their corporate strategy function. But that's just not how the world is. And certainly the more you are in or adjacent to the pieces of the world that are faster changing, journalism, technology, anything that AI is going to touch, which is basically the whole world, the less you can see. It's, you know, like you're in a snowstorm and you've got an inch or two of visibility in front of you. That requires an emergent strategy where I'm going to make the best decision for the next step or two based on the information I have. And then I'm going to learn new information by doing that thing. And then I'm going to make the next best step from there. And I can be opportunistic. I can have this fast learning cycle where I'm getting new information quicker, and I can adjust so that maybe it turns out you didn't want to end up where you thought you wanted to end up. That is not a failure. That is an adjustment and a redirection.
Well, failing, there is success, and then there are learning experiences.
Exactly.
From this book, when someone finishes reading the book, what do you want them to do?
I want them to go get a couple stacks of Post-it notes. I really should have invested in 3M before I wrote this book, because they're going to make bank off of the sale of Post-it notes. I want you to get a stack of Post-it notes, and I want you to work through the exercises. I mean, hopefully you're doing that while you're reading the book, but sometimes I get it. I want to read the whole thing first to see if it's worth my time. And I want you to start with really remembering who you are and what you bring to the table. And I think this is particularly true for your listeners who are thinking about that last chapter. My mother-in-law recently went through this transition. Kathleen was an executive for years and years and years, very successful, had this fantastic career in real estate, in social impact. And she got to the point where, through a combination of what she was ready for and what the pandemic caused, was like, okay, I guess we're retiring. I guess we're retiring. But she has so much that she's interested in. And it took a little while to sit with, okay, what are those other parts of me that haven't really had a chance to breathe? And through this process, She has become a very highly trained, unpaid volunteer at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's a very prestigious program for their volunteers there. I was like, that's a lot of hoops to jump through to work for free. She's thinking about writing children's books. She's spending just amazing time with my daughter, her granddaughter, who's three right now. And we had this conversation yesterday where she like snuck my daughter out of daycare so they could have the day together, planting herbs, baking cookies, just walking up and down the stairs at the library from one floor to the next and back. And she goes, look, I spent my whole life on a schedule. My whole life as an executive was one meeting after the next. And this is the first time I can just be. And it's an incredible freedom. And it turns out that's exactly the pace that three-year-olds also want to live on. She has no desire to be on my schedule. And it is the most perfect friendship between the two of them. So it's pieces like that where get reconnected with who you are and what you want, and then go have coffee. Go have coffee with the people who you love, but also go have coffee with people doing interesting things that you are curious about. I think that's the other piece of the Venn diagram exercise. It's not just about who you were when you were 12, which is definitely a relevant piece of information, but it's also like, what are you curious about? Even if you are the amateur in the room, what would you go and read 20 books on just to like figure out what that's all about? Because that's worth going down that rabbit hole at this stage.
Christine, yes. This has been good. So Christina, if someone wanted to reach out and contact you and obviously buy your book, how might they do that?
You can head to portfololife.com. There's links there to all of your favorite retailers if you want to buy the book over the internet. Obviously, you can also go to a store if that's your preference, or the library. Oh, I know.
Well, and I'm presuming an indie store.
I mean, that would be the preference. And then there's a way to contact me on portfololife.com. It goes straight to my Gmail inbox. If you want to send me a note, I'd love hearing from folks as they're reading and working through these exercises, how it resonates, where they're getting stuck, all of those things. You can also follow me on LinkedIn. I post there a lot as well, and we can have a conversation.
And we will include all the links in the show notes.
Thank you.
Christina, thank you very much for being on the Repurpose Your Career podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you found that valuable. I joke that she was quite young, about 40 years of age, which is much younger than most of you in this audience. Let me know if you found her insights valuable by emailing me at podcast@careerpivot.com. Take a moment, go to careerpivot.com, sign up for the weekly Career Pivot Insights newsletter, which is sent out every Sunday. You will get a weekly update on this podcast, white papers, and new blog post. When you subscribe, you will receive my latest white paper, Ageism, The Last Acceptable Bias. While there, do not forget to check out the Career Pivot community, which can be found at careerpivot.com/community. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Look for Career Pivot on LinkedIn. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode-321. You can also subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podbeam, Overcast, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, and lots of other places where podcasts can be found. In fact, this podcast can be found on the Repurpose Your Career podcast channel on YouTube. Hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career podcast.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.